Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad in Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson himself. Pete, how you doing?
I'm good. Just received an email from Amazon saying that I think the 13th and the 14th of October is Prime Day. So I'm currently stroking my credit card and apologising to the horrible things I'm going to do to it. And you can say, Pete, what about the corporation tax? Amazon is, you know, evil company. Yes, they are, but they do have a lot of electronics I want to buy. So there's that, isn't there? I am broadly anti-capitalist until there's an opportunity to buy a Roomba for 100 quid. So, you know.
A Roomba? What, one of the
robotic vacuum cleaner. Because I am intrinsically lazy, Chris. Until, like, mind you, though, is there a Roomba that could do stairs? When are they going to do? What's that company that does Boston Dynamics? When are Boston Dynamics going to produce a Hoover that can climb up the stairs and Hoover up stuff?
Spot the dog. Exactly. Yeah. Nice one. Yeah. That is a bizarre purchase. I mean, I've just been on Amazon buying less interesting things. I bought like 4 hard drives. Woohoo. And the reason I bought 4 hard drives is because I'm gearing up for Journey Across Japan 2, Escape to Mount Fuji, which unfortunately you can't join this time because you're not here.
No.
That's sad.
And that is the real crime. That is the real crime that I can't join you. Because I think I've spoken on more than occasions. I do actually fancy climbing Mount Fuji. Probably the greatest time to do it would be this year or next year, presumably, Chris, because I suppose there'll be fewer people actually climbing Mount Fuji. Am I right?
Well, there's nobody climbing Mount Fuji. Don't you remember we did a podcast on this? They closed down the whole mountain for like the next year. So nobody, nobody at all.
So how are you going to go near it? Why are you doing this whole thing? Why are you doing this whole thing then? Are you going to sneak?
I'm not climbing up it.
He's going to look at it. He's going to look at it.
That's about, don't ruin Journey Across Japan 2. You've made it sound rubbish now.
You're just going to look at a mountain. This is why don't you call the whole thing Chris drives across Japan to look at a mountain.
I'll send you a picture, mate. Drives across Japan to look at a mountain. You've just destroyed all my enthusiasm for the new Journey Across
Japan. Google
image it. Well, I mean, I really look
forward to these videos.
Well, I've never seen Mount Fuji very well. Like, I remember before Journey Across Japan, I went to do a test run with Charlotte for the series, and we were there like 2 or 3 days, and we saw nothing. And that was kind of rubbish because all the money we'd spent to get there was wasted, and we took like a team of people. It was awful. And so I thought this time, finally, going to go and look at it. So got this Journey Across Japan, Escape to Mount Fuji will take place over like a 6-day period. And it's myself, Dr. Jelly, Joey the Anime Man himself, and potentially Natsuki. We're trying to see if he can join for a day or two, but he's a busy man. He's got beauty salons to run. But hopefully we can get him on board for a little bit. That would be cool. And that is what's happening. But you've ruined it now.
I've ruined it now. It's fine. Absolutely fine. People still watch it.
We're going to get the videos just us going to be looking at Mount Fuji for 5 days and just looking. I don't know. I hope we see it though. I'll cry if we don't. That'll be the last video of the series, just me crying. Like, not again. Why? Stupid mountain. Sucks.
Yeah, is it like a time of the year where so outside a rainy season you're probably more likely to be able to see it from further away? Is that a situation that takes place? Like choosing the fall, the autumn to go and look at it is probably a better shout because the skies are a little clearer, no?
Absolutely. We certainly think so, right? I think October is one of the best months of the year to see it because September you've got like rain and typhoons and despair. October's kind of just a nothing really happens month. And I think that's our best chance. And also in the morning, if you get up early in the morning, you can see it. But unfortunately, I don't get out of bed till like 10 o'clock. So that is going to be impossible, even on the road trip. But hopefully we'll see it. We're going to be in the neighbourhood of Mount Fuji for at least 3 days. So if we don't see it, then it'll be like an act of God. And I'll know that God just doesn't want me to see Mount Fuji for whatever reason. Punishment.
Oh, punishment. Fun.
But yeah, looking forward to that.
What cameras are you going to be sticking to the screens? What mics are you going to be using? I want to talk tech, Chris. What little in-car modifications are you going to make?
We're going to have cup holders that can carry lots and lots of coffee. We've got GoPro.
Nice.
We've got GoPro, the new GoPro 956. There's so many damn GoPros, isn't there? But it's got like a screen on the front now, so you can actually see if you're filming yourself, you can see what's going on.
Oh.
But boring tech point here, because it's got a bigger, it's got more megapixels, right? I think it's like 20 megapixels or something now. So it's got, it could do 5K.
Right.
It means that it doesn't handle low light at all well. It gets really noisy and pixely and horrible. So I'm not overly enthusiastic about it. But we do have the cinema camera, the Panasonic S1H. And so that'll look good. But we're trying to film it. I'm trying to film it all in 4K or higher, like 6K, 5K, because I've never had any 4K videos. And I feel like we're going to go through some magical, beautiful places on our hit list, and it'd be a shame not to do it in 4K, right? I want to feel like viewers who couldn't come to Japan this year, like many of you guys listening, or yourself, Pete, can feel like you can still see and enjoy a bit of Japan from home, from the comfort of your own sofa, a bit like the original Journey Across Japan. So it's basically charity work.
It is, charity. Yes. It's an outreach program for fallen youth. Problematic youth like
Absolutely.
Me who misses Japan. I very much enjoyed your little video that you fallen into disrepair as in aging. I very much enjoyed your 4K scene that you, I think you set up like a tripod in a rice field, a paddy field, and you filmed a 4K bit of footage of like ASMR, an hour's worth of footage just for people to stick on like a roaring fire at Christmas on the telly.
Like a roaring fire. I like that. Yeah, there was a scene on the driving video I did back in August that I really liked, and I wanted to kind of turn that into a 30-minute therapeutic ambient video. And it turned out pretty well. A lot of people liked it. A lot of people just put it on the background, including myself, to stay sane while I'm indoors editing. Did you see the cyberpunk, like 80s cyberpunk style video I put out?
I did indeed, with your friend wearing a face mask, looking very moody. He definitely did a better job of the cyberpunk feel than I did walking around Gothenburg.
Forgot about your one. You were the front runner, weren't you, in our Osaka video?
Yeah.
That was good, that.
Yeah, I was very much the Kurosawa who gave so the much Kurosawa. To Western cinema.
Brilliant. We now turn our attention to story of the week, stories you guys have sent in from your experiences in Japan. And we've got one from Alex from California. He says, "Hi, guys. Been an avid listener to the podcast since the very first episode. I wanted to share with you the story of my very first day in Japan, which I still remember clearly, despite it being many years ago, simply because of how awkward it was. After spending a year in China, I decided to take a quick trip to Japan before going back home. Now, this is before everyone had unlimited data on their phone, and since I wasn't sure if my Chinese phone card was going to work in Japan, I printed out a screenshot from Google Maps with the address of my hotel. After spending about 2 weeks studying some rudimentary Japanese, I arrived in Tokyo. I took the subway and quickly managed to find the street my hotel was supposed to be on. However, after looking for at least 20 minutes, I realized there must be some mistake on Google Maps because I could not find the hotel despite being at the right place on the map. After a while, I decided I had to ask someone for help. Living in China, it taught me that it's usually best to ask younger people because many of them can at least speak a little bit of English. So I approached this young woman who must have been in her late teens or early 20s. I quickly realized that she didn't speak English, so I tried to explain my situation in Japanese. That's impressive, isn't it? 2 weeks learning the language, and here he is trying to speak. Judging by the horrified look on her face, I deduced that she did not know the hotel and was not used to speaking to foreigners. At this point, a middle-aged lady, a middle-aged Japanese lady who was walking past, came to my rescue. She could speak English, and after talking to the other Japanese woman, she showed me the way to the hotel. She then explained to me that the reason why the poor Japanese girl looked absolutely terrified was that she was under the impression that I was inviting her back to my hotel room. Oh, God, not again. Like last week, all over again. To this day, I still don't know how she came to that conclusion, given that I did just show her my map printout and was carrying luggage. So I definitely must have looked like a confused and lost tourist. After that awkward encounter, the rest of my trip went great, and I can't wait to go back after this whole pandemic situation is over. All the best, Alex from California. That is very similar to last week's story, didn't we? We had a story from someone who was had come over to Osaka, and they looked at a girl, and then the girl followed them back to their apartment with their girlfriend in it, and that was awkward. What is going on?
Yeah.
Any theories?
High-risk manoeuvres. Yeah, high-risk manoeuvres. I'm so glad the older lady kind of cleared up the situation with the younger woman, because that would just upset me terribly. I mean, like, you're going straight to the airport, and that is your first idea. Hello! How are you? Want to come back with me? Terrible. Awful. Wonderful. What a great story.
Shocking, isn't it? I can't believe that. I mean, I've never heard anything happen like that before. To be honest, my theory is the middle-aged Japanese lady was just making up a false assumption there.
You reckon?
Okay. I think so. I mean, I've had horrified looks on faces when I've asked people for help sometimes. You do get a lot of people, often teenagers or people who are in their 20s who are quite shy and awkward, and you'll be like, sorry, I'm asking you to help me. And they'll be like, hey, why can't I? And they'll panic and get scared. So that's probably more likely. I mean,
yeah, I guess so.
That's more likely than someone going, oh, he must want me to go back to his hotel room. Look at him holding that paper map and his bloody suitcase. Ridiculous. But at least Alex found sanctuary, got home, got to his hotel room after all. Well done.
And the police this week, were not involved.
Exactly. God, can you imagine that on your first day of the trip, being arrested. Well,
this has gone terribly.
So because Pete Donaldson was away last week and having the time of his life splashing about somewhere, the fax machine has piled up with comments, questions, stories you guys have sent in. So this week it is a fax machine special. What do we got in the fax machine, Mr. Donaldson? What's our first one?
Well, our first fax comes from Leah. Hello, Leah. Leah's from New Orleans, Louisiana, one of my favourite places in the whole wide world. Listening to your podcast is my favourite way to distract myself from the horrors of my daily runs. I wanted to tell you a weird story about when I used to live in Gunma. It was my first week before leaving to come back to the US, and I woke up early one morning to exercise at a nearby park. I did this almost every day, so it was a pretty common routine. When I arrived, I noticed there were two or three seniors there, which was unusual, but I ignored them and kept exercising. After about 10 minutes, I looked up and found myself completely surrounded by elderly Japanese people in high-waisted exercise outfits. One of them, who could speak a little bit of English, walked up to me and asked if I wanted to join. So I did. As you can imagine, I was a bit out of place because I was a foreigner and I was the only person under 60. I clumsily went through all of the exercises, and afterwards they fed me red bean sweets and tea. When I told them I was from Louisiana, two or three of the old men started singing a weird old song called Louisiana Mama. The man who originally approached me asked if I would let him come back to his house to eat some okra he had grown from his garden, since he had heard that okra was popular in New Orleans. Unfortunately, I had to decline and get to work, but it remains the strangest experience I've ever had in Japan. Has either of you ever been invited to join a Radio Taisu lesson? Thanks for reading. Love the podcast and the channel. Leah. Leah, what a wonderful story. Just going for a bit of a... bit of a jog, bit of exercising with some old people.
I mean, there's a nice photo of Leah nestled between about a dozen elderly, happy-looking people, all smiling greatly.
So cool.
Have you heard of Radio Taiso before?
No, right. I mean, I presume radio is radio, so I don't correct. Know what Taiso means.
Taiso means Taiso. Physical exercise.
Oh, radio exercise. Good.
And the idea is, like, in the workplace, whether it's a school or an office, whatever, that in the morning you put on this Radio Taiso and someone on the radio like gives you instructions, like exercise instructions, a bit like Mr. Motivator from the 90s,
yeah,
British TV. And people just do exercises, and particularly elderly people enjoy it because it's a good little morning workout. And the idea is it gets everyone motivated. It feels a little bit socialist to me, just everyone putting on the radio, listening to this, like, this person giving out instructions and working out. But people love it. People love it. I've only done it once, and it was all right. Wouldn't want to do it every morning, but it's popular.
I like the people love it. I've sort of walked past building sites early in the morning, and there's like the head of the building site is doing basically like a workout routine with all of the blokes who work on the building site, which is always like an interesting and weird thing to sort of witness. You're like, what's going on here? Yeah, they're just sort of working out. It's interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you like Pete, if you find yourself walking around Japan, like, I think it's somewhere between 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. I'm not sure, but you'll hear like, hey, two, three, hey, or like something like that. And there'll be like 10 people doing a workout in perfect synchronization, like star jumps and things. That is what Radio Taiso is. That is what it is. We've got one from Neil. Says, hi, guys. Interesting hearing Charlotte last week talk about voice coaching. Did you see the BBC Netflix show Giri Haji that had three of the main characters speaking Japanese and English? As it was written by an English guy, my Japanese wife was surprised how natural the Japanese dialogue sounded in home settings. If you saw it, what did you think about the language? The show was good, apart from the dance sequence in the final episode. Keep up the good work, Neil, from wet to cold London. Have you seen Giri Haji, Pete? It's a really good show, actually.
No.
On Netflix.
Oh, you know what? It's got the woman out of Trainspotting, Scottish woman. Is that right?
Yes.
Giri Haji?
Hasn't
it? I can't remember. She was in
Boardwalk Empire. Kelly MacDonald.
Yeah.
Good actress. Very good actress.
Yes.
It's a really good show. I was a bit reluctant to watch it because I thought that can't be good. How's that going to work? Like, the narrative is set across Tokyo and London. And it is really good. I couldn't stop watching it. I thought it was amazing. It's really well written. If you've got Netflix or BBC, I think you can just watch it online and you won't regret it. And absolutely right. Neil's right. The English was really well done, the voice coaching, because a lot of the cast didn't speak English very well. I don't speak it because they live in Japan, whatnot, and haven't lived abroad. So I don't know how they did it, but there would have been a heavy amount of voice coaching involved. A bit like Sharla working with the famous actress on the Godzilla movie, Shin Godzilla. Sharla helped an actress who couldn't speak English actually learn her lines and pretend to be an American. I don't know why they didn't just hire an American Japanese actress, but fair point. If you want to, it must be pretty tough, to be fair. It'd be like casting me to be a Japanese Yakuza leader and me being like, it'd just sound rubbish. It'd be rubbish, wouldn't it?
Learning it kind of like syllable by syllable almost. Fascinating. But really hard work.
But yeah, it would be bloody difficult. But watch Giri Haji. It's really good. And I think it's Shame and Honour. Shame and Honour is Giri Haji. Good show. Check it out.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card.
This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Nicole Goodman.
And I'm Lauren Mishcon.
In 2020, self-care can seem like yet another overwhelming job for women.
Every week, we test out a new kind of self-care so you don't have to.
Firstly, can we just clarify how we pronounce it?
Kombucha?
Kombucha. Yeah.
Kombucha. Kombucha. Self-care club. Wellness road tested.
So that was the first day. You know, it was just the not slipping into the complete default mode of what I normally do, which is have a go at my husband for what he hasn't done. And, you know, all of that stuff, I kind of stopped.
Okay, so it was more the absence of meanness rather than the projection of kindness at this initial point.
Yes.
Listen now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
This week, we are testing out menstrual cups. How are you feeling?
Dreading it. I know that you love to give a practice that's all about down below. I'm not interested. I've never even really thought about it since before I met you.
You've never thought about your vagina until you met me.
It doesn't get a lot of air. No, it doesn't.
The Self-Care Club is a Staccano production.
We got one here from Ben from Swansea. Whoa, Swansea. Over to you, Pete.
Lovely part of the world. Hi, Pete and Chris. I've been listening through the podcast back catalogue and came across the Japanese food to avoid show. I would like to add one of my food experiences in Japan to the definitely give it a go list. I was sparrow on a skewer.
What?
In a Shiki market. Oh, man. I'm always giving it a try something new. And when I saw the two glistening sparrows for about 300 yen in Kyoto, I knew I had to give them a go. The only way that I could describe them is kind of like a very chickeny crisp smothered in a delicious tar, although with a lot of
tare.
Of a bone. Tare. I thought it was tar. What's tare?
It's like a sticky, sweet soy sauce. It's really nice.
Right,
you get it
on yakitori.
Okay. It's not tar.
Nice.
Good God.
Okay. Well, maybe it came
crack
from the word
tar.
That's all I'm saying. Although with a lot more bony crunch. I'll admit, eating the head, eyes and beak took a bit of a leap of faith. Definitely worth a try if you see them out and about. We're hoping to return to Japan for Christmas in Hokkaido, COVID allowing. Can you recommend any unusual but delicious food in Hokkaido? Keep the good work, guys, and keep safe, Ben, in Swansea. Ben, the picture you sent of eating a sparrow on a stick will stay with me for some time.
I mean, I wish photos were never made or invented now. I mean, that is... Ben's got like a photo of him eating... It's eating a sparrow off a stick. It's horrible. Like, why is this a thing? I've never seen or heard this. This isn't like... some sort of local Japanese cuisine. It's literally just someone who's mental at Nishiki Market in Kyoto. He's like, I need to stand out. Let's get some sparrows and put them on some sticks. Horrible.
Yeah.
Disgusting.
I always sort of question, like, you know, when people get very upset about, I don't know, the Chinese eating strange stuff and exotic foods and stuff. I don't necessarily see a massive difference between eating cows and pigs and stuff like that to eating pretty much everything. If you're going to eat one thing, eat everything. That's what I say. Give me a panda. I want to eat a panda.
Oh, God.
But yeah, I mean, the sparrow just doesn't look like it's got that much food on it. So like what, you know, it doesn't seem like if you've got to eat the bones as well, it just seems like a waste of everyone's time and it's going to perforate your stomach. It's going to give you an ulcer, I've decided. How did he get you all, sir? I ate a sparrow. It's like that, I can't remember the bird, the French bird, that it's like a shameful act to eat this kind of, I think it's a songbird. The French give you, it's like, it's served in very high end. It's very, very gauche. It's very, it's like eating veal. You know, it's not a cool thing to do anymore. But, up until quite recently, there was a songbird that you would eat in French, really high end French restaurants, and the thing to do is to put like a shroud over your head so that you when you're eating the bird, because it's shameful to eat a songbird because it's such a beautiful animal. You eat the songbird and the bones jam into the roof of your mouth, making it bleed, giving you the salt, salting the meat effectively. Dreadful. Absolutely dreadful. Posh people are weird.
Good God. I mean, I think Ben should have a shroud when he's eating the bloody sparrows in Nishki Market. The sparrows should come with a shroud or a blanket and stick over your face. Oh, horrible.
Truly, me. Truly. Maybe that's how they caught them.
God. We got one from TC. He says, "Hi guys, I'm coming to you from Hannibal, Missouri." Hannibal. That's amazing. I want to live there. It sounds the coolest name of a town or city I've ever heard. I'm an avid fan of both the podcast and the YouTube channel, have been for some time now. I wanted to let you know there's been the content on the channel and the outlook on living abroad that has given me the final kick I needed to apply to the next season of the JET program. I've even begun teaching myself Japanese. I do have one question though. How have you ever gone back to the school where you taught English to visit any professors you may have had positive relationships with? Cheers, TC. I finished teaching in 2015 and I think I saw everyone again 2 years later or 1 year later for an event or like a dinner. And it was cool. It was good. It was nice to see everyone. But, you know, it always feels a bit weird going back to somewhere, I find, that you've moved on from. It feels a bit depressing. And certainly in Japan, every March, the academic year in Japan ends in March, right? Whereas it ends in July for us. Teachers in Japan get moved around every single year across different schools around their respective prefectures. So a lot of teachers I work with had already gone like 1 year after I'd went back to it. So that was a little bit sad. But yeah, I mean, I've seen a few and it's nice to catch up with them, but not in the last 2 or 3 years. And I don't intend to go back to the school now and be like, "Hey, it's me." Because they'll be like, "Who are you? We never worked with you. We don't know who you are. Why are you here?"
We see so many people every year. We see so many new JET people every year.
I'm there in spirit and spirit alone. But best of luck to you, TC. I hope you make it onto the JET program and teach the good students of Japan about Hannibal in Missouri. What a great town. I'm going there.
Indeed. We got a message from Mark. Shall I get on with Marky Mark's one?
Begin.
Thank you. "Hi, Chris and Pete. Love the podcast and now I can enjoy it twice a week. Rejoice. My fiance and I, it's like when people pronounce French footballers like in a really weird way. My fiance and I had booked to go to Korea and had been looking forward to it for months. We were due to go in March and the dreaded coronavirus hit. So much planning and researching wasted. Arrgh, it won't be wasted, surely, Mark. We've always loved the look of both Japan and Korea. And still intend to go to both as soon as this is all over with. As you have both been to both places, what are the best bits of both places? Any tips or recommendations? And how different are the cultures in general?" Marky Marks.
Oh, I remember we did a podcast on this about 2 years ago because both you and I went to Korea in the space of the same month, didn't we? Separate trips. Yes. You got stuck on an island and I got drunk and did silly things in Seoul. But from what I remember, Seoul has got like such a good nightlife. I mean, Tokyo's nightlife is a little bit, it's good, but it's not as dynamic and fun. Like in Seoul, people are like drinking out in the streets, chilling, having fun. Whereas Japan, the streets are kind of empty and barren and all the fun happens behind closed doors, right? I like the food in Seoul. I think Japan's food's a little bit more diverse, but I'm sure people will say that's wrong. But I did like the barbecues and the cheese fondue of Korea. I remember that very fondly, too fondly, admittedly. But no, I feel like the nightlife was better in Seoul than it was in Tokyo. Those are my thoughts. What about you, Pete? Thoughts?
Yeah, I probably agree, to be honest. I mean, I would I would sort of suggest never going to Jeju during June because, or never going anywhere in June because it's too bloody hot. Jeju in June, it's so bloody hot. I had an episode on a day where I was in a very hot Jeju, it's like the island off the coast of Korea. It's where all the Koreans fly to their holiday destinations, and we're in Airbnb close to the center, and we went to the beach, and I couldn't find a taxi back, and I was covered in Korean hot wings sauce, and I was losing my mind a little bit, just losing my goddamn mind.
I mean, the food is really spicy, isn't it? The wings, the sauce, the red, burnt my mouth out on some really cheap, pot noodle, cut noodle style thing.
Right.
Just set my mouth on fire. I was crying after trying it. It was like, this is a little bit spicy, my friend said, and I tried it and instantly crying, instantly couldn't eat ever again. It's horrible. So be advised, be careful. Korean spicy food is leagues spicier than Japanese food. It's pretty hard to get spicy food in Japan. But I'd say Seoul, really great nightlife. Japan, maybe better for a longer trip to explore. But, I mean, I haven't seen Korea as much, so I can't really say. But do go back and listen to the podcast. We did have a good, hour or so, didn't we, discussing our experiences in detail. Experiences I've forgotten, given they were 2 years ago now, sadly. got one here from Matt. Says, good day, gents. Matt from Perth, Australia. Love the podcast, particularly since discovering it before my wife and I spent 3 weeks in Japan for our honeymoon in May last year, a trip we absolutely loved. Always good to catch up on episodes while walking my husky, Chuck. Congratulations on the honeymoon, Matt, and just having a nice husky called Chuck. That's always good. My question is, next February, I'm turning 30, and I would love nothing more than to head back to Japan with my family. I know this depends massively on the whole pandemic situation, but let's just be optimistic, shall we? Given that I've got two brothers, I'm a bit of an adventurous type, a massive nerd, and the proud dad of what will be a one-year-old at the time. How would you spend 7 to 10 days gallivanting around Japan with first-time international travellers? Love the work, boys. Keep what you're doing. Kind regards, Matt. Wow, that's a big group of people. Two brothers and a one-year-old. What would you do, Pete?
Wow.
Where do you go with that?
I mean, I wouldn't even know. I wouldn't even know how to entertain that amount of people in wherever I was anyway. So how I would possibly do it in Japan. But I imagine, what 1 year old? I mean, there's very little to entertain a 1 year old anywhere. I would say they're just entertained by bright colours and noises. So you can probably provide those wherever you are. The short answer is I haven't got a fucking clue, Matt.
just walk them over Shibuya Crossing a few times, and that'll certainly give an interesting impression.
Sensory overload.
Honestly, that is a tough one. I don't have a kid, a one-year-old kid, I don't know what I would do with a kid that young in Japan, really. I mean, I would just say leave the kid at home or somewhere, but with grandparents and go with the brothers. But that is a monstrous thing to do with a newborn kid? Just leave them behind? Take them to Disneyland.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what the politics are about that, to be honest. Yeah.
Universal Studios, take them to Harry Potter Land. The newly opened new Nintendo Land, it should be open around then as well, in Universal Studios, or where I think that's where it's being built, isn't it? Nintendo Land, where you can de-Mario things. That'll be cool. Tough one. Tame Disneyland. Yeah. Disneyland, and that's it, isn't it? Any ideas? Really, places, though? Any ideas?
I'm trying to think of somewhere presumably elevation is a good idea. Take them up somewhere tall.
Elevation?
Well, just take them up, Tokyo Tower or something. Take them up somewhere tall. Let them have a look around and stuff. Because babies aren't scared of anything, are they, really? I'm sure there's a lot of parents who are listening in. What works with your little ones?
Absolutely. And also, if you do go to Tokyo Disney, I'm not a big fan of Disneyland myself, but I think kids would love it. If you nearby to Tokyo Disneyland, there is the dinosaur robot hotel, and you check in and there's big dinosaurs walking around everywhere. Your check-in staff is just like a dinosaur. Kids would love that. That is what I would take a kid to see. And they'd either love it or they would cry and be very, very scared. I think I would have been terrified, but It's just an idea. It's just an idea. Yeah. But yeah, if we've got listeners who've brought like young kids to Japan, what do you do? Where do you take them? What about a cat cafe? That could be fun. Play with the cats.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm just thinking, I mean, one is just very young. I can't figure out what. Do 1 year olds know what a cat is? I don't know. You might find out they're allergic.
We'll have to bring a 1 year old on the show and ask them.
We will have, yeah, we would have to do that. Yeah.
What's a cat?
Do you know what a cat is? Little baby.
Dear, dear. But yeah, let us know. Let us know. No. We're keen to find out what kids do in Japan. We've got one here from Neil. It says, hi, Chris and Pete. I'm Neil from Vancouver, Canada. And I must say, I'm very grateful for the time and effort you put into sharing your experiences with others online. I say that because I love to indulge in the escapism of your glimpses of life in Japan. It's great for helping me relax at the end of the day. Speaking of that, I was wondering how openly or publicly Japanese culture and people deal with stress and anxiety. Is it common for people to share their thoughts, concerns, and worries in conversation with friends and colleagues, or does the politeness culture result in these things kind of being bottled up and kept to oneself? I've been dealing with some anxiety recently, and being able to share it with friends and hearing they have problems is also a relief. That is to say, I'm not alone in my worries. Many thanks for the wonderful videos and podcasts. Neil from Vancouver. Wow, that's an interesting question. I know, I mean, Natsuki certainly opens up about his worries, maybe a bit too much. Like every time I meet him, he's always worried about something these days. To be fair, it's been a bad year for him, so I think that's fair enough. But for the most part, yeah, unless they're a very close friend like Natsuki or maybe Ryotaro, people do kind of keep it to themselves or their kind of partners, like their, you know, their wife, their husband or whatnot, or very close friends. But yeah, I mean, have you ever met anyone in Japan that suddenly opened up to you, Pete, told you
no,
big things?
I mean, to be honest, like, you know, Japanese society, that kind of collective culture, and the fact that the country was kind of closed off for a long time. And there's very little, it being so hilly, there's very little buildable land or inhabitable land in the actual that's not farming land. So obviously everyone sort of grew up kind of next to each other and sort of building properties next to each other, and the towns and villages were very, very close knit. So people sort of learned not necessarily to express themselves, not even to express a yes or no. We've spoken about this before, the idea that people just don't want to sort of express themselves about their opinion, and you wait until the most senior person in the room expresses their opinion. And so I imagine that people expressing themselves in telling people of their anxieties and worries and troubles and just general kind of feelings, it doesn't happen very often, and obviously suicide rates in Japan are pretty obscene, but they are getting better because people are, you know, understanding the science behind it. Certainly in this country, certainly Britain, where obviously there's big campaigns about how to, you know, that we need to express ourselves a little bit more and you know, help each other out, and that mental illness is just like, you know, having a mental ill health is just like having a broken leg or a physical disability at that point. So yeah, these things are treatable. You know, you never lose them, but these things are very treatable, and I've never really experienced anyone expressing themselves in a— I remember, like, last time I went, there was a girl at the bar, like, crying her eyes out and stuff and shouting at everyone who would listen and stuff. And as you probably know, Chris, that's a very, very rare situation for anyone to sort of to reach out and express any kind of displeasure in how their life's going is incredibly, incredibly rare.
Well, I mean, I remember when I was having some anxiety issues in the workplace, like when I was in my second year, I think I was a bit burnt out and I was a bit just confused as to what I was doing, why I was here teaching students at one point. And I had a bad few months, but I remember speaking to teachers and they'd be like, you should get more sleep. And it was like, oh, cheers. It just wasn't good. It just wasn't useful. Nobody really knew what to say or do because nobody did talk about that often with people. So yeah, I mean, it's not really— people don't really talk about it. And that is why it's so common. It just— every week there's been a bad year for celebrities. A lot of celebrities have, every week there's someone who's taken their life, and they've done it by surprise because they've had no one to turn to. I remember, I don't know if I mentioned this, but I did a video with Ryotaro a few years ago, with two girls from a idol group called Kisby, and we did that like 2 or 3 years ago. It was quite fun. We did some game called Karata, some sort of card game. And then the other week, someone messaged me saying, did you know one of the girls, the lead girl in the group who took part in the video, actually took her life? And I looked it up, and jeez. Yeah, she'd taken her life despite being very young. I think she was 17 or 18, maybe even younger at the time. So that's pretty sad and pretty sudden.
Yeah.
But it's pretty common, and it's a big problem here, no doubt about it.
Yeah. I think the kind of very regimented K-pop and J-pop discipline, becoming like an idol or a music star is a very, very unforgiving and unloving place to be. Very it's regimented, very strange, very weird.
But I mean, one of the assets of the country is also its downfall, right? They have this culture, gambare culture, like do your best. Yeah, everyone do your best. But often people do their best, but often at the expense of their mental health, and then they break. And it's good in the sense people here are quite stoic and they get on with it when there's a disaster. People pick themselves up and, you know, look forward with a sense of optimism and strength. But, you know, it does also leave people behind because it's so ruthless. You've got to be pushing forwards. And if you can't, it's tough. So, yeah, it's a tough country. And certainly when I had issues, I was just like, I'll keep them to myself. And I did, because I didn't see any good from coming from it, really. I certainly wasn't going to go to the doctor and be like, I'm like anxious and depressed. They'd have been like, you should go back to the UK. And that, I thought, fuck, I can't have that happen. I remember talking to another friend, a friend of a friend went to see like a doctor because they had some sort of depression, I think. And the doctor just said, you should be happy more. And that was the diagnosis. That was the
wow.
The advice. So,
you put on a T-shirt.
It is, isn't it? So be advised, if you have anxiety issues, I don't feel Japan's the best country to handle it. So be aware of that. And I worry sometimes people coming here to teach English or move to Japan see Japan as like a way out of maybe feeling bad. And I'm sure living in Japan and moving abroad would help, but also be advised that it comes with its own set of risks, and mental health issues in Japan are handled very, very fucking badly, to put it bluntly.
Yeah. Being out of your comfort zone, you've really got to be very secure and practice a lot of self-care. I mean, I think wherever you are in the world, but I mean, being apart from any kind of support network is a risk that a lot of people find very, very challenging.
Well, you should just be happy more, Pete. Just be happy more.
Yeah, you should be happy more. Oh, you
smile
happy
more.
More.
Yes, yeah, fine. God, can you imagine that?
Have a little song. Have a little sing song. Have a little sing song. Go on then.
Dr. Pete's on the case.
Yeah.
Dear, oh dear. Keep the stories, questions, comments coming into Abroad in Japan podcast@gmail.com. If you've visited Japan with kids or you've had mental health issues in Japan, you want to open up about your story and how that played out in Japan, whether it went badly or in a more positive way, we'd be keen to hear about that. It's a big issue that we'd be keen to explore further. But for now, guys, as always, many thanks for listening. We'll be back in the next few days to do it all over again. But for now, no matter where you might be, out in the big wide world, thanks for listening to the podcast, and we'll see you on Wednesday or Sunday. I've lost track of what day it is. Don't know what day it is.
It's Wednesday, Chris. Yes. You got it right the first time.
Typical me, eh? See you on Sunday. See you on Wednesday. See you.
Idiot. Stop it. Oh. I'm stopping the show. Stop.
I should be happy.
Music
more.
Playing now. Music now.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.